Second hour, My Guys in the Desert here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Daniel Alvari. ER Aaron Renning is alongside as well. Good show. If you missed out on any part of the first hour, Lou Finicaro is with us. Fantastic analysis on UFC 263.
Yes.
Of course, VSiN.com/podcast and a very good card. Cannot wait to watch Nate Diaz. Look, it's great. Yeah, you smoke weed. Everybody does now. It's 2021. Win a fight. Let's go. Well, that's just a good point. There we go. You're a little too quick to the defense. I mean, right. Thinks doth protest too much. Okay. So I wanted to go over a couple of bits of news in the association with the ER. First off, one that's a little bit more timely because the Los Angeles Clippers in the offseason, they did some tinkering with their roster, and it wasn't really great in terms of what they added. Think they needed a little bit more help at point guard. You saw that at a trade deadline when they acquired Rajon Rondo. But one of the big pieces, literally, in the offseason was Serge Ibaka. And you expected him to be, in a matchup like this, where you have a Rudy Gobert that you would potentially play off the floor with some small ball lineups, a really big piece. Him and Nick Batum, in terms of rotation at the five, would have been pretty important. Serge Ibaka's done for the rest of the year. Back surgery. It's a back injury that has bothered him all year long. And, of course, we'll keep him out for the remainder of the season. So a pretty big blow there for a Clippers team already down in the 2-0 hole.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he hasn't played forever. He tried to come back to, the final two games of the year. It's kind of weird. You know, Patrick Beverley getting a little bit more run now. And what do you want to see here from Tyronn Lue? What do you think the Clippers? You want to see more Batum, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the start, especially in those closeout minutes, right? It's because I think there was a lot of, hey, get Marcus Morris off the floor because he bricked a couple of threes last night down the stretch. He got some really wide open looks. To me, that's not the solution. The solution is get Luke Kennard out of there. You know, Luke Kennard is not a great defender. He worked against Dallas when there's not the other ancillary pieces that will search him and destroy him off ball, right? But in this kind of a matchup, he can get a little bit more lost, especially when every single person outside of Rudy Gobert is going to shoot a three. And some of those breakdowns communication-wise yesterday, part of the reason why is you have a guy who's DMP'd almost every single game, and then you throw him out there in the fire, and you're like, why didn't you pick this guy up? Like, so I think that's the first first move you make if you're Ty Lue. When those closing minutes come, it's Nick Batum and it's Marcus Morris in your front court. Right. I think you go from there.
And you know, that's great. And then also here, Kawhi offensively. He hasn't been very good. He certainly hasn't been the Kawhi Leonard of Game 6 and Game 7. Now, coming into this series, the Jazz were known for being able to hold down Leonard. The last 2 years, they had the best effective field goal defense against them. Very good against Kawhi here. So, you know, who's going to step it up here for the Clippers? You know, Kawhi will it maybe at some point, but boy, seems to be carrying a lot of weight here on his shoulders.
Yep, very much so. And they got to figure out a lot of things in terms of their defense, too, because a zone defense, which they busted out for a good chunk of that third quarter, and I think they went on like a 26-9 run to get right back in the game. Quinn Snyder's a really good coach, and they're going to figure out how to attack a zone defense, you would think, relatively quickly. And, I mean, I am not a basketball coach. Last time I checked, though, a zone defense against a really good three-point shooting team a lot of the times is not going to work, right?
It's, you know, it's bizarre. Right. Again, it's just kind of the nature of the NBA. And, you know, I was surprised the Mavericks did it as much as they did against the Clippers, who shot 41% from three-point land, whether it worked or it didn't work. But you see now teams in the playoffs, and we've seen this in the Bucks series, where if you have that drop coverage, teams are attacking that and really getting essentially free throws when they attack that big man. That's why they've kind of gone to that zone defense. But yeah, overall, I'm kind of not a big fan of it.
And last 60 before we reset here, but really quickly, we should note, so it was reported that Pascal Siakam is already going to rule out to start the 2021-2022 season. That's not so much news as it is you tie it in with the fact that this season is starting in October, right? That's the news, is that this is now back to its original start time. This is a very short turnaround for a lot of these guys, especially these NBA finals. Kawhi Leonard, as you mentioned, when they get to the finals, were you going to see him at the beginning of the season?
He's out till Christmas. I can already tell you that.
So we'll see. I mean, again, Clippers, very confident. I refuse to wane, ER, until they're gone.
Well, hey, you know, I don't know who has more confidence in the Clippers, you or Tyronn Lue.
Right. He's very. That's fine. Well, and that's the other. Ty Lue, too. I mean, to eliminate, the minutes of, a Terrence Mann type, too. If we're going to get a little deeper into, the adjustments you make, Terrence Mann's been relatively good for them.
I do
I think I'd rather see Terrence Mann than, the Patrick Beverley and Rajon Rondo backcourt.
More so than Rondo, for sure.
Yeah, Rajon Rondo is he's not been playoff Rondo. Very, very disappointing, no. Considering you thought that's what
I think you
got
to bring in a guy like Beverly to, you know, maybe frustrate Mitchell a little.
Yeah, he's doing a couple of good things in there, but regardless, you got to get a little bit better. It's My Guys in the Desert here on VSiN, the sports betting. Second hour of My Guys in the Desert here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, Aaron Renning alongside as well from the OddsTrader.com studio at South Point Casino. OddsTrader.com, download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up to the second info that you need. Let's dive into a little bit more of Major League Baseball. Scott Miller is nice enough to give us some time today. Host SiriusXM MLB Network contributor over at Bally Sports San Diego as well. Scott, appreciate it. So I wanted to start with actually one of the games that is already in the books today and some more big picture stuff. But the Chicago Cubs get an 8-5 win over the St. Louis Cardinals. They've won three straight now, still standing on top of this division, half game lead over Milwaukee. But to you, you know, I think Chicago's been somewhat surprising. Like, what's the staying power of this team? Because from a pitching perspective, I've been surprised by what they have gotten from their pitching staff as a whole.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, you know, we knew Kyle Hendricks and, you know, some way he can bring. But, you know, some of the kids like Alzolay that have come up and produced, you know, that they've been a shot in the arm for the Cubs. And, you know, they since 2016, as we know, they've disappointed more often than not. They had some winning years, but, you know, everybody's all fired up about the Cubs back around after they won that first World Series. And basically the thinking was this is a group that should win multiple World Series. And then obviously it didn't happen, and they gave that core group every opportunity they could. The guys like, you know, they didn't want to break up the Chris Bryant and Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber and Anthony Rizzo and on and on. But finally, they reached that breaking point last year, and they decided, you know, shoot, you know, we need some to regroup. So Schwarber's in Washington, John Lester, they didn't re-sign. I thought that was another one. They didn't even really give him much of a look, and Lester would have gone back there for less money because he loved it there. But, right now it looks like after Theo Epstein leaves, general manager Jed Hoyer, has pulled some right levers. Now, staying power, we'll see. But, we're about a third of the way into the season. We're definitely to the point of the season where you begin to look at things as not being a fluke anymore, but this is what looks to be real.
Yep. So with Chris Bryant, because a lot of the shops, probably about third or fourth choice in terms of NL MVP, and we'll get to Jacob DeGrom and his contention for that award too. But in terms of what you've seen from Bryant and this kind of turnaround, is this health related here? Because obviously we know he's had some very good seasons, a lot of years right around 290s, never hit over 300 for a year. But what you've made of Chris Bryant up to this point, is this mostly just health and this is something he can maintain as long as he stays out there?
Yeah, I think so. I think a couple things. One, he's healthy. That's a big thing. So as long as he remains healthy. Two, last year was just brutal for him and for a few others. I mean, he couldn't get out of his own way. But, you know, you look, Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger were two others that are both former MVPs that really, really underperformed last year. And I think what we learned is you almost have to throw last year out because not only was it just a short 60-game season and guys who started slow didn't have a chance to make up for their slow start because by the time their slow start was there, the season was about over. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you know, I mean, that pandemic affected, you know, baseball players, football players, civilians. Nobody went unaffected by that. Everybody was completely affected. And, you know, in Chris Bryant's case, for example, he and his wife had their first baby I believe it was early April. And so he's dealing with a pandemic. Baseball players are creatures of routine and they don't know, when they're thrown, they're used to doing the same thing every day. Well, obviously spring training shut down April, May, June last year, everybody's sitting at home. Some people are working out on their own. Others have access to gyms or facilities or workout partners. Others didn't. So for all of these reasons, I think players, both their psyches and their performances, were all over the map last year. And some were adversely affected, and, mm-hmm. and Chris Bryant was one. And you can understand, you know, he was hurt for some of it. He was off balance. There were all the trade rumors. His wife and he had their first baby in April, so that he had a whole new experience there. There's a lot for Chris Bryant to digest last year.
I have to ask you, Scott, Jacob DeGrom on the mound tonight for the Mets. I mean, boy, what amazing numbers. I mean, do you remember, compare him to any kind of season that you've had in recent memory? And overall, how do you feel about this Mets team perhaps holding on and winning the NL East here?
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly got more than a puncher's chance, right? I mean, the Nationals are underperforming, and everybody thought that was going to be, and myself included, thought that was going to be the toughest division in baseball. And, you know, doggone, most of the teams have been struggling just to get over 500 in that division. And, you know, the thing with the Mets, they were hit with some COVID losses, personnel losses early in the year. They had a ton of rainouts, and they were shut down as a team. They missed a bunch of games because of that COVID outbreak. And so what happened was, among other things, you know, the Mets still have played fewer games than most other clubs. And I think it's taken them, for all those reasons, a little chance to, it's taken them longer than others to regain, to get their balance, get their legs out under them. And I think from that perspective, absolutely, the Mets, you know, they're starting to play better now. You got a guy like DeGrom fronting your rotation. And I think that absolutely they can win the division. And, you know, Atlanta has suffered some injuries and some losses. They're not as strong as maybe you would have said in April. I mean, they had the, you know, the arrest of Marcell Ozuna and the domestic violence thing where, you know, it looks like they're not going to get, you know, he won't be playing this year. Mike Soroka was supposed to come back. He didn't come back. You know, he came back briefly, but he's hurt. You know, the Mets, I think the longer this goes, they're also going to be feeling a lot better about themselves too.
So I'm curious, like, go ahead, Scott. You got something else?
No. Simply what I meant by they're feeling better about themselves. I mean, and that contributes to their chemistry, their comfort, their swagger, and that all, you know, the better you feel about yourself as a team, a lot of times that translates into wins.
Yep. And so let's talk about this division as a whole then, because right now we're talking about a price of around $3 for the Mets to win this thing. Phillies are 3.5 games back. Braves are about 4. And when you look at this, look, Phillies have won, I think, their last two series for the first time in a while. So they're starting to maybe feel a little bit better about themselves.
Yep.
But how big is the gap right now between the Mets and the rest of this division? Because we're talking about implied probability of that price, about 75% that they're going to win this division. I like this team a lot, but this early seems somewhat high. But what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, boy, that seems really high. I mean, you know, the Phillies still have a lot of weapons. And, you know, Nola hasn't pitched as well as I think he's going to. And, you know, they've got others, you know, Wheeler on the mound. And you know, the lineup's pretty solid. You know, Rhys Hoskins and you know, many others, Alec Bohm at third base. I mean, well, you know, Phillies are, I think they're a dangerous club. They've had some issues earlier in the year. You know, they had some bullpen issues, both performance-wise, and then some guys not seeing eye-to-eye with manager Joe Girardi. In fact, Gene Segura, there was an incident with Segura and Girardi as well. So they're a team that's, I think, still figuring things out, and it could go either way, but I think talent usually wins out in the end, and they're too talented not to, you know, I think make a run at the Mets. So I think the way, you know, way shaping up right now, and I still wouldn't discount the Braves. I mean, I know I kind of did. I said Ozuna's out, and Soroka's out, but that's such a good organization, and they always seem to make the right moves and have people they can find. But beyond that, you know, the Mets. Mets are looking good right now, but yeah, short answer, what you said, I think the gap, I don't see it, that National League East, is it, where the Mets are the favorites, then there's a big gap, and then there's everybody else. Mm-hmm. I think the Phillies are closer, and, you know, the Braves, maybe, depending on a few things.
So we're talking about the National League. We've talked about a couple of the key players, especially near the top of the MVP race. You know, Ronald Acuña, Jacob DeGrom, Chris Bryant. And when you look at this NL MVP race up to this point, when you talk about a guy in terms of DeGrom potentially winning this, how Acuña is viewed if his team finishes right around 500, like where we're at here, and of course we haven't really talked specifically about Fernando Tatis and the way that he's been playing as of lately, your early read on an NL MVP race and where you think it stands at this point.
Yeah, I think those guys you mentioned, and I would definitely throw Tatis in there. I mean, that guy, as you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. is just phenomenal. And he's had such a weird year in that, You know, he was sidelined. He's been absent a couple of times. He went on the injured list when he had the beginnings of what looked like the Padres feared could be an oblique issue, and they nipped it in the bud before it got worse. He was on the IL, and then he came back, and then his season was interrupted again with you know, he tested positive for COVID, and then he had to sit out for another 10 days. But his numbers he's put up in fewer games than the other guys, you know, they get your attention. And, you know, with him, it's always going to be, is he going to stay on the field or not? Because he's had some other injuries in some other years. You know, so that's what will play out over the next 4 months of the season, 3.5 months. And if Tatis Jr. stays on the field, he's a guy I would not bet against in anything, whether it's an MVP race or lifting his team into a division title, which obviously would be newsworthy given that, you know, the Dodgers have won 8 in a row and they're trying to win 9 in a row as we speak.
So let's keep this going in terms of some individual players. Our producer, Matt, is very excited, and as am I, I'm an Angels guy, about Shohei Ohtani, and who's not at this point. He will be on the mound today. But we could talk about MVP and whatnot, but, you know, he is a relatively long shot if we're talking about a Cy Young in the American League. Lance Lynn has been absolutely fantastic. What are the chances that Ohtani keeps this up, this sub-3 ERA, and potentially competes for a Cy Young? He's 60-1.
Yeah, I think, and I love Shohei Ohtani. I think his talent is exceptional, and the fact that, you know, I keep telling people, you know, and actually I wrote a long piece on him in May for the New York Times, and I think the thing people need to, you can't get hammered home enough. As good as he's doing, as well as he's pitching on the mound, and as much as he's hitting in the lineup, two-way player. I mean, everybody says, well, you know, nobody since Babe Ruth has done this, which means, like, Babe Ruth, we're talking 100 years ago. You have to be 100 years old or older to have been a baseball fan and witnessed what we're seeing with Ohtani now. I mean, this dude is doing something that all of us, most of us, have never seen in our lives. And he's doing it at such a high level, going two ways. So from that perspective, I think, this guy is as good a story as there is in baseball, and I think it's fantastic what he's doing. And I'd love to see, you know, him stay healthy and the Angels get to the playoffs, and I think he easily could be an MVP candidate. Now, whether it's MVP or Cy Young, and you asked about Cy Young, I think, you know, two things. One, obviously he has to stay healthy. But two, and this is the key to me, he hasn't pitched more than 100 innings since 2016. You know, he in Japan in 2017, he was battling an ankle injury. It kept him off the mound a little bit. And then in 2018, his first year with the Angels, you know, he eventually blew out toward the end of the year the elbow. He had to undergo Tommy John surgery. So the key, and then last year was shortened season. He still wasn't healthy. So not having thrown more than 100 innings since 2016, that's a benchmark to me, because I think he's healthy enough and in shape enough. He'll throw more than 100 this year if he stays healthy. But, you know, we're not going to see – he's not going to approach that 200 mark. You know, you're not going to ratchet up his workload that significantly. So, you know, the Angels haven't said yet where they're going to draw the line. You know, just me – ballpark guessing. I mean, I could see him maybe doing 140 innings this year if he's healthy, maybe 150. But, you know, that workload is going to play into the Cy Young voting. You know, in other words, it's not going to just be his results, but it's going to be his results on the mound measured against others. And then, and I say this as a guy who sometimes votes for the Cy Young Award, I know a lot of us like to look at workload as one of the things, not just ERA and strikeouts and everything else. And, you know, if his numbers are there, so do others, but other guys pitch 30 or 40 or 50 more innings than him, then, yeah, I mean, I can see that's why you would lower the odds for him in terms of a potential Cy Young.
The last 2 minutes here with Scott Miller. So let's talk about Ohtani's team then, because quietly the Angels entering a soft part of the schedule. They're 11-5 in the last 16 games, and their next three series, we're talking about Arizona, Oakland, and a four-game set with Detroit. Can they maintain this little bit of a pace here until Mike Trout comes back?
Yeah, they need to, because what they need to do, obviously they haven't been in the playoffs since 2014. We all talk all the time. Talent like Mike, he's only played three playoffs in his entire career. And by the way, I know last year's playoffs were expanded in the pandemic year, but Fernando Tatis or seven playoff games last year, or eight, it's somewhere around there. But anyway, he's more appearances just last year. So, for Trout's sake, for the organization's sake, it'd be nice if the Angels could keep going. This is a crucial point now because we're in June. Obviously, we're not that far from the July trade deadline. First-year GM of the Angels, Perry Menezes, is clearly going to need to look to add pitching. So if the Angels can keep this little role going and at least stay on the periphery of the race, if not in the race, then maybe Manassian can make a mark by getting another starter or two or a couple of relievers, and then maybe the Angels could be positioned to make a second-half run. I'd love to see it, because now you're talking, not only would it be a great thing if Mike Trout could be on that October stage, but Shohei Ohtani. I mean, can you imagine if the Angels could play in October and everybody in the country is watching them and Ohtani is there as well as Trout?
Yep. Scott Miller, SiriusXM, MLB Network. Hey, Scott, we always appreciate the time, man. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, guys.
Yep, you got it. Again, Scott Miller, Scott Miller BBL up on Twitter. Really great follow in terms of baseball. Yeah, don't sleep on my Halos.
Ever the optimistic. Halos, Clippers.
Hey, as long as there's a pulse, bro, you got a chance, and that's all you need is a chance. All right, we'll come back. We have best bets. A couple more of these specific games, Major League Baseball. We got a lot to get to the last 40 minutes, so it's my guys in the desert. Days for your winnings. Cash out instantly with BetRivers' new feature, Rush Pay. Get your cash when you want it at BetRivers Sportsbook, the industry leader with exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boosts, and the most in-play betting options out there. Look at that. It's a millennial's best friend. We want instant gratification, right? That's what they say about us. As always, get $250 match bonus, fastest payouts, and only a one-time playthrough at BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Got to be 21. Gambling problem. Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. Colorado 1-800-522-4700. Michigan 1-800-270-7117. Virginia 1-888-532-3500. Not valid in Iowa. It is my guys in the desert. I am Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Danielle. ER's alongside as well. An irregular Friday spot. You find yourself here on Fridays regularly, do you know?
I'm the Friday end of the week, man. No one talking NBA. At least the NBA playoffs are probably over, JVT.
Nothing goes hand in hand more than ER and the weekend, man. Mm-hmm. Just like that, huh? All right, so speaking of the NBA, we have two plays. We do our little best bets here in the next couple of minutes. I will give you the floor first. Age before beauty. What do you got?
I'm going to come in with the Clippers tomorrow. I'm going to lay 4 points, and this is it. I think from a talent perspective, I think the Clippers are as good as anyone.
It's never
they can be capable, and kind of trust that Ty Lue is going to make the necessary adjustments. Can we trust that, JVT? But I'm going to here, and arguably the Clippers are the better team. They're down 0-2. Everything's on the line here. I would look for Kawhi to guard Spider Mitchell a little bit more here. I don't think Conley will be available in this game as long as the Jazz are up 2-0. So I'm going to go with the Clippers.
And here's the thing. Guard Spider Mitchell more aggressively, because we saw at the beginning of that Dallas series where he was guarding Doncic, but then they'd run a really soft screen over and he would pass him off really quickly. But then you saw toward the end of that series, he's fighting through screens, mm-hmm. right, going over him, maintaining his position in front of Doncic. That's what you kind of want to see.
Great point.
Right,
and excellent point.
Some intense defending of Donovan,
and quite honestly, he the way he's played the last six quarters, he's due for a little regression as well.
Yes, I mean, we saw some sprints yesterday, some rips and some rebounds and ripping down court, and he had a really nice one in transition with 94 feet and then slammed it home. But you got to see that over the course of four quarters. The nonchalant attitude does work for the most part, but you kind of want to see it, because 2-0 series holds. back-to-back series, not exactly what you want to see. Kind of hard holes to dig out of. All right, for me, we will go to tonight, Suns and Nuggets. So this is where you shop around for these money line prices. Circa had Suns plus 114 about, 20 minutes ago or so. So that's where I'm in at. Suns money line price of plus 114. I really don't think, regardless, and this is always a fun conversation to have with people, but regardless of the outcome tonight, I don't think there's any denying the value here is on the Phoenix Suns in this situation, whether it's a money line price, the line, which I think that the Suns should actually be about a one-point favorite. But we've talked about this a lot. Team down 2-0, going back home. You're always paying something with those sort of teams. And like you mentioned, this first half number is nuts because we're talking about like 2.5, 3 now.
Three,
in the market on the Denver Nuggets. So that's another great example of the tax that you as a bettor are paying in these situations. So I'll take the value here. I think a team that should be slightly favored on the road is getting about plus 114. That's a pretty good chunk of value in my mind. So I will go with the money line on Phoenix later this evening.
Good luck. I will have I have some sort of a bet here on Denver in the first half, kind of with that that trend, if you will. But hey, the beauty of this is we have a chance for both of us to cash a ticket.
That's right.
Tonight.
We're both happy. Or we can also both be very upset.
So right. Very true. See, I thought you were the ever optimist.
I'm also logical. You know what I mean? So logic says that there's also another situation where that happens. And I will say, you know, focusing on this matchup really quickly, because I want to get your thoughts, because one of the ways that I was attacking this too, I talked about this with Danielle and Vinny the other day. For those prop players out there, one of the ways to look at this was getting under these assists on Jokic.
Yeah.
Because I think the other pieces around him just aren't performing to a very good extent. Now, last game it was kind of a bad beat because I think he sat out the majority of the fourth quarter and he finished on 6 and the prop was 6.5. But regardless, 4.5 assists per game against Portland, only 3 in game 1. Like, that's a different way to kind of look at this from that perspective.
Are you playing props at all in this playoffs?
That's the only one where I've actually
been looking at a little bit more because, you know, you can get plenty down. Circa's actually doing a great job. I think they're taking like 2,000 on player props with them. I actually bet Jokic over like 29.5, 30 points. Didn't play in the fourth quarter, basically. Shut out of that. But that's the way, and really kind of the theory with that, JVT, is they're not going to double Jokic. It's up to him to be aggressive and score. And you're right. He's going to, I mean, the rest of the Phoenix defense has been tremendous so far. So, you know, it's a team that's playing very sound defense, 1 through 5 together. So, actually, that assist prop makes some sense.
All right. ER's with us again for the entire show. I mean, we're here. We only got 30 minutes left, so he didn't really have a choice. We're in a little bit more on baseball, some individual matchups today that we didn't get to with Scott Miller at the top of this hour, which, by the way, he was great. VSiN.com/podcast if you missed out on any part of that conversation. Major League Baseball, a couple more points on those props too at the bottom of this hour as well in terms of the NBA postseason. We roll on here on My Guys in the Desert. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Baseball season in full swing. Get it? So it's a perfect time to work on cashing tickets every day. Our VSiN experts give you all the tools to make the most of every baseball bet, including live odds and analysis for every game on VSiN.com/MLB and our daily members-only best bet emails. Now is the time to start your free trial. Take advantage of all of the betting opportunities this baseball season at VSiN.com/subscribe. So we take a brief reprieve from current events, and this is pretty current because it's going to be a pretty big deal. But ER, we did get news the other day. Headline, college football playoff will consider a proposal for expanding to a 12-team format. Some rumblings that it's a more of a, what's the word I'm looking for? That it's going to happen, pretty much. This is just something that they're going to throw out there. Yeah, we'll consider it, but really, it's more than likely going to happen. Now, proposal does not include guarantees for conference champions. Instead, calls for the bracket to include the 6 highest-ranked conference champions plus the 6 highest-ranked other teams as determined by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. So we're still going to get this ridiculous bias where these guys actually have to decide whatever it is. So that'll be interesting. I guess there is still some value, of course, in winning your conference, so there's something like that. If a 12-team bracket were implemented last year, to give you an idea of what we're looking at, it would look something like this. Your first-round byes would be 1, 2, 3, and 4, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. first-round matchups, Cincinnati, Georgia, Notre Dame, Coastal Carolina, Texas A&M, Indiana, Florida, and Iowa State. So 12-team bracket, first four get a bye, and then you move from there. Now, I think a lot of people would think, wait a minute, hold on, why is Oklahoma in the top four? Wasn't it Notre Dame? Oklahoma would get the bye as the fourth highest-ranked conference champion. So there you go.
I mean, about time. I mean, this should have been done 20 years ago. It's a little bit strange. You go from 4 to 12. And if you read between the lines or really read the article about it, JVT, it seemed like the spokesman here, whoever was quoted, I can't remember exactly how it was, basically saying we still want to see Alabama or Clemson be in the champ with the first-round buys. I think that's what you would kind of pick apart. And what you would talk about here, is that fair? Again, kind of a rigged system to give every opportunity to have your best team get there, which maybe is the right thing to do. I guess I'm not quite sure about that. Seems like 8 would be a more of a fair fit, if you will, and everybody has a chance. It's going to take a few years for parity to kind of sink back in, because right now it is all about team, Alabama or Clemson in there. They're so powerful because, the kids see these teams playing in the national title every single year. So I think it's about time this comes. I look forward to it. And, can you imagine if the Super Bowl was just two teams, basically? You didn't have a playoff? I mean, about time here for college football.
Not only that, but, the players essentially got to choose to go wherever they wanted in the NFL. So then it's just the same, the same feeder system. And you're absolutely right. And that was my complaint, after watching this latest college football playoff, where you're setting it up for a system of almost repetitive nature, right? Until these coaches are gone, and even then, it's just the brand at that point that lives on itself. And you just keep recruiting. You get your selection of first-round picks, essentially, and you get just refilling the system until you until that kind of ends. And this is, by the way, from Brett McMurphy over at Stadium, does a great job covering college football. The report that I was referring to tweeted out yesterday, pending approval, which it will be approved, college football playoff headed to 12 teams. Earliest start would be after the 2023, a lot of 20s in there, regular season. Because of impact, expanded playoff, expect anywhere from 4 to 10 bowls to be eliminated by 2020.
And, another thing that's certainly in vogue here for college football players, if you're not in that Final Four, these the best players are sitting out.
Right.
They're getting ready, preparing for the NFL draft. So that's certainly a trend I think college football wanted to see stop. Yep. That's why I think you have as many of these 12 teams. And it would be interesting is if you have a 10 seed or 11 seed Alabama, would these guys still forego and get ready for the NFL or play, I guess, what it would be multiple games here to win a national championship.
Now, and I think there is some question as to even by when we reach the end of a college football playoff, right, especially the first couple of years, will we probably get the same few teams? In a situation like this where we have the 12 that we're talking about last year, more often than not, we're probably talking about the same Final Four, if maybe some room for quibbling around the fourth seed, right? Because Oklahoma would be ripe for picking it. Any one of 6, 7, 8 would potentially match up with them. But regardless, it still opens up the door for something to happen in a lot of these situations.
Right. Is Coastal Carolina going to win 3, 4 games in a row, whatever it is, to win a national title? Absolutely not. But could they give Notre Dame a run for their money in one game? Perhaps.
And it's almost kind of to your point, right? It is trickle-down economics to a certain extent, because if you're a team that is consistently making it to a college football playoff of 12, then all of a sudden your recruiting classes, you're sitting there going, look, we're competing. We're going there. So why don't you come here? You'll get playing time and you'll get the chance to go to a college football
playoff. I don't know how clear it was, JVT, as far as the conference winners will not be assured in there in the Power Five. That would be certainly one thing that I'd like to see. But if you remember that, they play a championship game, so you're talking about an extra handful of games, but certainly a lot of money involved, good betting opportunities hopefully as well.
So my reading comprehension is not great, but so you get your 6 highest-ranked conference champs. So a conference championship guarantees you a seat at the table.
Okay.
Whether or not you get a bye, of course, is up for grabs. But you could win your conference champ and then, of course, your championship, and then sit there and still find yourself in the two. But regardless, your first-round buys, and you get your 6 highest-rated conference champs, next 6 highest-ranked teams. So we're still going to get the opportunity to snub a Coastal Carolina, which is why it's funny, because these are your final 12 teams because of the rankings last year. I am willing to bet that I don't think Coastal Carolina finds its way into a college football playoff.
Right.
Just because, look, the track record of these college football playoff committees has not been great up to this point. So we'll see. Maybe it opens the door for one of these mid-majors, and they open the door and they give them a 12 seed or something like that and get their doors blown off. And they're like, see, I told you the whole time. Should be some of these other squads. But regardless, you do get a little something here. All right. from there, we move on. I will be fascinated to see, and I should really quickly, actually, because we'll get to baseball on the other side. This also opens the door, too, for more exotic options for you as a bettor, right? Odds to make the college football playoff, you know, odds in terms of being a top four seed, like all of those things. And in terms of being a bettor, for those who like those sort of futures, more things to bet on is also a very good thing for those out there.
Right. It's going to even it out to a degree. I mean, I don't know what the current odds would be on Alabama or Clemson to win the national title next year. But obviously, you got to win 3-4 games here. It's going to be a tougher road no matter what.
Yep, exactly. So, again, 12-team bracket. We're going to get it in the college football playoff. And that will, according to Brett McMurphy, at least over at Stadium, be implemented in the 2023 college football season. So, from there, we do have a couple more Major League Baseball games to get to quickly. Arizona-Anaheim, you were looking at something here, right?
Yeah, I'm going to play this game over the total. Ohtani against Kelly. Obviously, Kelly's very much a go-against pitcher. 2-6, 5-12 ERA on the year. Not good against the Milwaukee Brewers last weekend for him. And Ohtani's interesting contrast, how you look at him. Obviously, the velocity, maybe the stuff overall is gone down a little bit since that opening day, and it gets a little bit less. Now, he did fire back and pitch very well last week, was against Seattle. So we'll see if that's an upward trend, but I'm going to bet not. And I'm going to bet this game over the total.
There you go. So pregame total, at least here at the South Point, 9. No shade either way. It is minus 110 on both ends. Angels, $1.40 favorite on the road against the shall we say struggling Diamondbacks? It's gone a little bit past that.
Understatement.
Right. All right, we'll come back. Last couple of minutes here on My Guys in the Desert. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. My Guys in the Desert, live from the OddsTrader.com studio at South Point Casino. OddsTrader.com. Download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up-to-the-second info that you need. JVT, Aaron Renning, we were with you here today. Missed out on any part of the show, VSiN.com/podcasts. So you're pretty into this college baseball thing, huh?
I'm a little bit. I'm paying a little bit of attention. Obviously, 64 dwindled down to, what are we at, 24, 32, whatever it is. And then on to the World Series after this weekend. So paying attention to it. Again, I have a little bit more time, not handicapping 15 NBA games a day.
Yes, that is always thrilling, right? No more Sacramento-Detroit games late night on a Wednesday or anything like that, huh?
And we're only 3 months away, JVT.
Yeah, like what'd you say? I'm going to start working on the NBA guy here in like a month. And plus, we still got Summer League this summer. Oh, man, there's so much going on.
Oh, yeah. Forget about that.
Coming back to Vegas, baby. Premier basketball spot, tell you that much. All right, really quickly, so I wanted to bring this up just because I wanted to shake my head and I guess discuss to a certain extent. So the Milwaukee Brewers today are going to be taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the respect that Brandon Woodruff, and he well deserves it, but the way that the market has evolved on him over the course of the last few weeks has been pretty sizable. Now up to a $3.20 favorite today over the Pittsburgh Pirates. And look, the Brewers have been playing really good baseball. This is the other part about it, right? They've won 11 out of 13 games. They're a little bit healthier now. The lineup is starting to come to life a little bit more. So we'll see if this, you know, projects over the course of a long run, because the market has been really stubborn on Milwaukee in terms of that division. Like, they're still the favorite to win that thing, even though Chicago has been playing some pretty good baseball for a longer period of time. But I think it's worth pointing out, one, the market and the way that this has definitely increased from a power rating perspective on Brandon Woodruff, and also to bellyache very quickly that I got my guy at 15-1 to win the Cy Young, and I was telling Mitch Moss the other day, he had a start against Arizona last weekend where he gave up like 2 earned runs over 5 innings, and I'm like, come on, bro, what are you doing? Right. Like, you got to keep pace here. What's happening? There's no shot.
Well, it's a little bit like the Angels, I guess, JVT. Again, beating up on the weaker opponents, obviously Cincinnati to a degree, but Arizona on the road last week. But the Brewers, it's interesting how they will be priced in this division, JVT, because from a game perspective, with the pitching, the starting pitching they have, I guess, what do they have, the big three, I guess you would say at this point, Burns, Peralta, and Woodruff here.
You're going to have, if you want to include Hader in the bullpen.
I mean, you're going to have these $2 price because of the starting pitching, these main guys.
Also helps that you're taking on an opponent like the Pirates.
true.
I don't think that there's much respect for a team like the Pirates in the market at this point right now.
No, some bad baseball teams out there.
Yes, there is. Indeed. You allow guys like Javier Baez to run circles around you in certain situations, and then you make SportsCenter. All right, let's go to – we'll go back to the NBA. Different little vibe here. For those who weren't with us at the time when we were talking about some of our best bets in terms of some of the player props, one of the angles that I've been kind of harping on, the Nikola Jokic assists under has been a very key prop that has been coming in. And usually they're baked kind of high too because Jokic is a passer. He's got a very good reputation. So that has been something that has been pretty profitable looking at that under assists for a Nikola Jokic. How often do you get involved with the prop stuff unless you see like a pretty big edge somewhere?
I pay virtually zero attention to it during the regular season. Now in the playoffs, especially as we get fewer matchups. And again, it's one of those things where you can pick up, you can see who's guarding who, etc. Maybe the adjustments that they will make. I kind of kicked myself. The Philadelphia game, Atlanta, wanted to bet Trae Young under because you knew that the focus was going to be on him defensively. And just he had been so great scoring. He's still averaging, what, 29 points a game into the playoffs. So you can pick up on those things where, you know, if you think or if you look at it and you think, well, Kawhi's going to guard Spider Mitchell tomorrow, pretty much half the game, more than half the game, maybe you want to bet Mitchell under on the road. So those are the things that you're kind of looking for in the playoffs. And I think you, with the assist props with Jokic, really makes a lot of sense as well.
Yep, and here's the other, like on top of like an angle that you're talking about, right, because we're talking about Trae Young, and I always tend to look at when you're talking about player props, generally the stars are always a little bit higher than they should be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're looking at Joel Embiid today, 32.5. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing about a Joel Embiid at 32.5 is we're talking about outputs of 39 and 40 points. Like the Hawks have had no answer for him whatsoever. And if they do make an adjustment, would be the one that you're discussing,
right,
which is John Collins playing
good five,
which means Joel Embiid would probably still be cooking with, as they say, fish grease. It's going to be still annihilation down low for Joel Embiid. So even though 32.5 seems high, right, that is not one where I would find myself looking under, even if there is still some value.
Yeah, here's another one. And again, some of the lesser players, it's very hard to find the numbers on it. But, you know, it's a good way to build your bankroll. But what I noticed in game one is also what you have to look at. Who's Trae Young guarding? And he was guarding Curry. And Curry, of course, was able to come alive, Seth Curry, in that second game as well. So I see him marked at 14.5. We'll see if he has another big game. I would assume that's Trae Young's going to continue to guard him.
Well, and you know what? So, and this is, I will give Doug Kazarian credit on this because I was talking to him the other day. He brought this up in terms of an angle for, as we keep with the theme of Hawks and Sixers, which is going to be coming up here in about, what, like 15, 20 minutes from now? Actually, it's 4:30 tip our time. Mm-hmm. But Ben Simmons rebounds under. You know, if he's going to be guarding along the perimeter much more often against a Trae Young type, those rebounds are probably going to be very scant. And sure enough, first two games, 4 and 3, the first two. And you're talking about a rebound prop of 7.5 for Ben Simmons.
Good point.
Right? But it goes along, and it's a great point, and it goes along the line of thinking about this from a matchup perspective. You know, a lot of the times, I think the general bettor will look and be like, 7.5, that's it. That's a low number. But your point is, especially when matchups become so much more important in the postseason.
Right.
Like, you can get a gauge on where you think some of these props are going to go, and a Ben Simmons along the perimeter more often on defense is going to lead to less opportunities for defensive rebounds and thus going under a total like that.
That's a great point. Again, if you can find liquid, if you can find those type of props to be able to bet it, those are the way, to me, that's where you're going to make your money rather than bet sides. I mean, what are you going to do, bet the Bucks plus three, the Nets plus three, Milwaukee minus three last night, you come away with a push. So, obviously, other opportunities in the prop market.
Yep. So you see some of the Hawks and Sixers game three props there. 32.5 for Joel Embiid. 20.5. These are points for Harris. Curry 14.5. Simmons 13.5. And Green 8.5. The Simmons point props are pretty interesting as well because it seems pretty clear. And he did have 17 in game one, but it seems pretty clear that they're not focused on getting offensive production.
And they don't need it. You know, obviously Embiid can score. Harris, Curry. I think really get on Simmons and say, well, he's got to score more. Yes, if they play the Nets in advance to the next series or whoever they would play, he does need to score more. In this series, he does not. He needs to stop Trae Young. And they were able to do that, and he saw Philadelphia flex their muscle and be able to do it. So to me, it's all about the defense here for Simmons against Young and to stay out of foul trouble.
Yeah. So is it fair to say, though, with Simmons, because I've made this argument, in this series, you don't need offensive production. In the next series,
right,
you might. You need a little bit more than four points.
So at some point in your career, you'd hope you'd get it.
Yeah, my argument has been, like, I don't even care about the three-point shot. Give me, like, a little push shot, right? Give me, like, a little mid-range something that you can actually
make free throw, attempted three-point. Well, actually, we probably don't want to see attempted three-pointer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's like 10 feet and in, you know, expand the range a little bit. Mm-hmm. Give me 6 more feet on where you can score from. And there it is. And as far as Atlanta goes, 27.5 for Young. Bogdanović, 17.5. Again, these are points. Collins at 14.5. That would be one, too, if we do see the adjustment that you're talking about. John Collins, small ball 5. You could potentially see a better game from a guy like John Collins because he would be the beneficiary of getting Joel Embiid out in space and stretching the floor.
And again, I don't know that. That's just a guess and watch for that to happen. But, yeah, Collins or Gallinari.
Correct.
We saw Gallinari perk up in that last start. Really interested to see if that unfolds here.
What have you made of DeAndre Ayton in the series against Denver up to this point?
I'm not a huge Ayton fan.
Yeah.
A lot of people are giving him a lot of credit. I guess I leave the door open for him. I'm kind of iffy, 50-50 on. How about you?
I think that he is – the way I've put it is he's doing what he needs to do.
That's
right?
A good way to put it.
I don't know if he is – I'm with you, like, in terms of there has been some, like, good Lord, look at this child. Mm-hmm. Like, look at this guy. I'm like, well, I think he's doing exactly – like, 15 points and 10 rebounds. It's exactly what you need. And just don't get roasted entirely.
Yeah, he's really improved, certainly from an effort standpoint defensively. You know, that's what you bring Chris Paul in for, to be able to kind of that on-court coach, if you will. So, yeah, give him credit.
Yeah, he's one that I would tend to find myself betting under on some of these.
Yeah, 0.5 assists.
Right. Yeah, half an assist, and I think he's had 4 total assists in the postseason. And in the regular season, I couldn't even tell you how many he had in the regular season. Let's see. Averaged, look at that, about 0.6 assists. No, 1.4. Okay, he's a little bit better than I thought. That's the blocks. But regardless, you know, it's funny. So I think I do wonder when we talk about some of these props how much perception of how the guy is performing factors into some of these because we're talking about Ayton. If you heard the conversation around Ayton, you think he would be having an ungodly type series.
Uh-huh.
But in reality, like 20 points in game 1, 15 in game 2, 15.5 seems relatively high when what they're asking him to do is finish on some lobs and within 4 feet of the basket.
Again, you have to keep in mind what's his job here, to slow down the Jokic. It's all defense for Ayton, so anything they get from him offensively is a bonus. And, you know, the Suns have made it very clear that they are not going to double-team Jokic.
Yep.
So, again, the onus clearly falls on him. So, if you are playing props, yeah, maybe you want to bet 8 and under.
Yep, and the last one on this one, again, this one's later tonight, Phoenix with that 2-0 series lead. It does seem like, especially in crunch time, they don't really have an answer for Chris Paul. 21 in game 1, 17 in game 2, 15.5 for his point total here. These are matchups in which he thrives, bringing big old Jokic out into space and doing what he wants with them, and he's done it so far.
We knew that coming into the series that the Phoenix backcourt was going to have a chance to dominate, certainly control this series. That's what we've seen certainly at times in the second half, or I guess the first half of last game, the second half of the first game. And that's what Chris Paul does is essentially control the game, et cetera. And, you know, that's the thing. Booker hasn't even gone off.
We haven't even had the Devin Booker game yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, 21 in game 1, 18 in game 2. 42% from the floor, by the way, in game 2. It wasn't even an insanely effective game from Devin Booker. So we'll see if this is going to be fascinating. You know, again, game 3s are very important, but some of these that we're going to see, very, very big swings. Clippers got a big game 3 coming up this weekend, and, of course, we'll see if Denver has anything left in them because you'll find out tonight. If they got something in this series, it'll be there.
What's the adjusted series line on the Clippers?
Ooh, I think I'm talking – you put me on the spot.
It can't be that big of an adjustment.
No, I don't think it's very massive. Really quickly, what do you got tonight? First half Denver? Is that it?
Yeah, I got the first half Denver. I really don't know what to do with the Philadelphia game, and, of course, going to come back with the Clippers tomorrow.
Plus 350 on the Clippers, adjusted series.
There you go. Double down.
Right. Phoenix money line for me. That does it for my guys in the desert. Thank you very much for everybody. Join us, VSiN.com/podcast is spot to go. If you missed any part of this show or your favorite shows on VSiN. All right? I'm sorry, I don't remember what's coming up next, so stick around. VSiN.